everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political left Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, listeners. Wow. Good to be back with you. And it's good to be back with you both.
And on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, likewise. Yeah. Good to see you. We reintroduced ourselves to each other just moments ago.
Well, you know, I want to start by talking about what's happening in Iran, but there's so many entry points, and I'm going to start with this War Powers Act. So this is the Senate voting down the Iran War Powers Act after Senator Fetterman voted with the GOP majority. I don't think that's necessarily a surprise, but it just shows how this country can't quite seem to get over the hump on this war.
Yeah.
Is it one way or the other? Are we all in, or are we ready to, you know,
is it a war? Is it not a war?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as we do that, you've got all these different alliances forming in the Middle East. Right now, Saudi Arabia has formed a military alliance after some of these Red Sea attacks. I think there's some other ones going on, you know, in the Strait of Hormuz. And this is like a reordering of geopolitics.
Yeah, I think that's right. So interestingly, on the vote, Fetterman, who has, I think, become a real, what do we even say?
Dino?
It's
Democrat,
yeah,
name only.
Something strange is happening. But three Republicans joined Democrats to vote against, or I guess to curtail, Trump's power. And I think that's important to acknowledge as well in a moment where we see a party that feels endlessly full of sycophantic behavior for Donald Trump. Three of them did try to rein him in on this, which I think is also telling. The other thing I think this can't really go on without me mentioning, the reporting that we've seen over the past few weeks about under Hegseth's direction, a real misinformation campaign about the number of people, Americans, who have been harmed in this war already, the kinds of injuries people are suffering, the magnitude of that. Mm-hmm. So this is really all part of a terrible, it's hard to say anything other than, I think, just a looming disaster for ongoing disaster for the people of Iran and for Trump.
Well, and I think, Natalie, you and I were talking briefly about this earlier today. But the peace dividend that we had, you know, coming out of the Cold War is ending.
It's gone.
And so it's gone. It's one of those things, you know, whether it's Iran, whether it's Russia, all sorts of wars around the world and conflicts, folks are rearming. Countries are rearming. They're waking up to see that their supply chains are not what they need to be if a major conflict comes along. And those take years to restore. And so that's where we're sitting is, this is not just shaking up issues in the Middle East, but this is a wake-up call to many nations around the world that the peace dividend is over and they've got to rearm.
Well, yeah, rearmament. So you'll hear that saying, so goes Iran, so goes the economy, so goes Iran, so goes mortgage rates, so goes Iran, so goes President Trump's administration. And who would have known that, you know, this type of decision would be this last so long, have that many cascading impacts?
Yeah, I think the Iranian people might know that.
Yeah, because they've done this before.
Yeah.
Been there, done
Well, we talk about, you know, weeks, months, years. They talk about millennia.
Yeah. And I do think that there is something just kind of back at the root of, you know, the empty promise that was made around Trump not getting us into these foreign wars. There's nothing he likes more. You know, it just seems like such an incredible blunder, a choice that he has made, and one that is driving up gas prices and making life harder for Americans.
All right. So I want to build from that. But one last thing to just say, I've been fond of using the term rinse and repeat.
Ooh.
And that is just to say that you can't figure out what's going on here because oil prices spike and then they come back down and we look like we're getting there. So inflation starts to.
We're negotiating. Now we're not.
Then
we're
then
bombing.
It pops
now we're
and the uncertainty that it's created is just paralyzing.
Yes.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Well, and I think we also have the uncertainty of who's in charge, who are you making a deal with, who are you. I mean, I was listening to a news report just the other day, and it was talking about, this faction wants to make a deal, and they're the ones that think they're in charge, but this other faction does not want to do a deal, so they're scuttling things.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Well, so you mentioned oil prices and what's happening. Look at what's happening with Chevron, Shell, ExxonMobil. they,
let me guess, are benevolent corporations. Well, are they keeping... are.
Yeah, they're in a global marketplace.
That's right.
And the price goes up, and they, you know, bid on in the global marketplace, and they have record profits.
Record profits. And again, this is, I think, something that ultimately speaks to the kind of politic that is Donald Trump. It is for the rich to get richer, and for everyday Americans to have to pay more and figure out what they're going to do.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, sometimes there's record profits, sometimes there's record losses, and things swing back and forth. And we always sit there and complain about record profits, but we forget about the record losses they have.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell appears to be missing.
Yes, exactly.
Where do we go with this? I mean, what's the latest news? Because as I understand it, he's in a hospital room. Is that what we think? And
that's what AI pictures tell us. No, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's tough,
right? Better than he did in 10 years. I have no idea what's going on. And clearly, folks in Kentucky are wondering. Folks, I think, in the Senate are probably wondering.
Yeah, I mean...
It stuns me that it's this mysterious, because if we just say, if this happened in Utah with one of our senators, we're just a cohesive state that talks a lot and has a lot of connections, and we would know exactly what was going on. We might, you know, not agree with something, or we may not know every detail, but we'd certainly know, you know, the condition of the person.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a very strange story.
That's what I think, John.
You're thinking we should have a debate and see if he has a Joe Biden moment, and then we can determine?
He's had many. Do we not remember that for many years leading up to this, there were moments where Mitch McConnell was asked a question, and he just phased out?
Yeah,
I mean, froze up.
He's not been well, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, this is not...
I do not know why people want to stay in the Senate this long.
Right, well, we just had a House GOP member, I believe the first female elected... to the House in Texas, die in office, 83. She's been, I believe, in a assisted living facility in Texas for the last month, if not more.
Well,
like, this is the problem of a gerontocracy. When we have folks that simply do not know when to stop, and then we have this kind of prolonged absence. He's been gone, when we're recording this, 50 days since anyone has seen him. People do not have 50 days of sick leave in this country. Like, this is absurd.
Probably not since anybody's seen it, but since the public has seen it.
Since the public has seen
it. Since I've seen the two of you, we lost Senator Graham, Lindsey Graham. Now, that news broke hard. You know, it was sudden. I didn't expect it.
He was in Ukraine having meetings and then
comes home, talks to the president. I have one memory with him. I can't remember if I've shared it on air before, but I was back in Washington helping with an immigration issue. But I think I told you this, but we met in his conference room, and he had us say a prayer before our meeting. It was one of those things where everyone around the table held hands.
Oh, wow.
Which is not what a little Mormon girl does. We don't pray before meetings, and we don't hold hands when we pray.
Yeah.
But I always had a little bit of a tender place for him because of that experience, because I saw his seniority, I saw his power, and I also saw a gentle side to him.
Oh, I think the people who are on the other end of the wars that he propagated would probably feel pretty differently.
Yeah, tell us more.
A real hawk, an unrelenting war hawk. I mean, up until, I think, you know, unfortunately, his last day.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of those things. It's interesting because he had some vicious attacks on Trump when they were running for president, and then somehow mended fences, and it seemed like they had a great relationship. And Trump is not one to be forgiving. And so it was an interesting kind of contrast to see how they started their relationship versus how it ended.
Yeah, for sure.
John, did you see that the U.S. Senate unanimously passed a bill opposing a pardon for Ghislaine Maxwell?
Ghislaine
Maxwell.
Yeah. So I learned about that today. Had not seen the vote, had not seen a news story until today. It doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things. It's like, okay, how do they...
How could they feel good about that?
Feel good about that, especially given the Epstein files and everything else.
Well, so then we also have the Trump administration filing emergency action to the Supreme Court to allow, you know, an order restricting mail-in voting. This goes right at the heart of the state of Utah, because we've been a leader here, not a laggard, and I think Utahns really like their mail-in ballots.
This is true. So we know that the vast majority of Utahns vote by mail. I have to give huge shout-out to our lieutenant governor, who continues to really be, a voice of reason, really going to the record, what has the Trump administration produced to suggest that there is a problem with mail-in voting. He's lost repeatedly in court on this issue, and I'm proud of the stand she's taking for our right to vote in the state the way we like to.
Well, you look at the Constitution. The Constitution leaves the responsibility of voting with the states unless Congress acts. It doesn't say unless the president acts. It says unless Congress acts. about time, place, and manner. And so this is one of those things I look and say, this, first and foremost, should be a state issue, should be run by the states. And if Congress wants to weigh in for the Constitution, they've got that prerogative. But to me, the president's overreaching.
Yeah. Let's talk measles for a minute.
Okay.
I watched State of the Union on Sunday. We had Dana Bash, and she had the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Secretary Kennedy, on. My goodness, did it get uncomfortable.
It got uncomfortable.
She was trying to, you know, share her point of view in the reporting about the data, the science, the studies, and he just went after her.
Yeah.
It was very uncomfortable.
Also, I didn't see it.
Well,
so.
He just said, can you cite the study? And it's like, she's a reporter. She would say something like, over 70, you know, peer-reviewed studies have shown this. He says, cite me one study that's done this. And as a journalist, like, you're not going to be able to cite the study, but she's got the American Society of Pediatrics that have done different things.
Yeah.
It was just one of these things where you're like, have we really gotten this bad? Where
yes.
the top public health official in the country is going after a reporter that's trying to just kind of lay out some, you know, some information. And make your point of view, make your case. But he went after. I thought it was over the top.
Yeah, I thought it was concerning for many reasons. Utah, I believe, has the second largest measles outbreak right now, mm-hmm. behind South Carolina. She's plainly asked him, you entered into this office saying, mm-hmm. you know, basically mm-hmm. propagating a lot of conspiracies around vaccines. Do you take any responsibility for this? Mm-hmm. And he said no. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's on top of we've got this huge cyclospora outbreak. Two people yeah. now have died in Michigan. Our public health infrastructure is falling apart, and he takes zero responsibility
for it. He wants to do a special, I'll call it.
It's not like Dr. Fauci wants to take responsibility either for the public health. So, you know, we've got lots of issues.
He certainly did in his years and years of service to this country.
Oh, I don't think anybody's done a greater job to discredit public health than Anthony Fauci.
Interesting. I think you have been red-pilled on this one, unfortunately.
Oh, really?
I really do.
You look at disaster, you look at his arrogance with all that. And so, you know, I'm not condoning RFK. With his activities, I think by and large, vaccines do an overwhelming amount of good. But I recognize for some folks, they cause harm. And we have to have some humility when it comes to what we know and how we help folks and help them make informed decisions.
Yeah. One thing that Dana Bash, yeah. one thing that she did that I thought was interesting, I guess the secretary has this special commission that's looking after the relationship between vaccines and autism. And she just said, couldn't we twist that a little bit and do a study on the causes of optimism rather than associating it so closely with, you know, the MMR vaccine?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just things like that. There's this messaging campaign that vaccines are bad and you're a public health official. And it just seems to me like we're going too far on the side of sensationalized information rather
right.
than science.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So, okay, let's take a short break and we'll be right back. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gorbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We'd love to hear from our listeners like you. If you'd like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Once again, that's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We're going to turn to local news. And what did you read, John, on the Colorado River deal? This is the upper states, the upper basin states, yeah. the lower basin states.
So what I saw of it is the federal government had allowed the states to try and negotiate and work out arrangements. Got to the point where they're like, okay, fine. If you're not going to figure out an arrangement, we'll put one down. And I would say that it may be read as favoring the upper states versus the lower states.
And that's us.
That's us.
Just for the record.
Yeah.
That's Utah.
Yeah. It's like the cuts we're going to get aren't really in the arrangement. It'll just be cuts in how much water actually comes down the river. But in terms of the lower states, California,
Arizona,
Nevada, it's 12%, 20%?
31, I think, for Arizona.
30 was the highest.
Mm-hmm. This summer heat makes you think about the water problems we have, does it not?
It does.
It's something.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised we haven't talked more about drought conditions in the last month as a result of this significant heat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then you see the fires in Spokane and you just shake your head. I mean, just fingers crossed that we don't have something of that
magnitude
yes,
well,
in our state.
In some We've had massive fires.
I mean, and flooding.
Yes, that followed it. And I think, it's, one of the things that caught my attention was the reporting on how high our overnight lows have become. Mm-hmm. So when it doesn't cool off at night.
Where I live, I think it's got in the 60s once in a month.
Yeah.
And that used to be a differentiating feature of Utah is the nice summer evenings.
Yep, nights.
It's feeling
cool
a little bit more like Phoenix here.
Yeah.
Yeah, rough. I also want to talk about, can we just talk about the One Utah Summit for a minute?
Yeah.
So this is this week.
I hear you're going to speak.
Well, it's Governor Cox's summit. They hosted it at Southern Utah University.
I heard it was the Governor's summit.
No, and they do all sorts of good things. But I have a challenging message to convey.
Oh, okay.
In 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Yeah.
What are you going to say?
Well, I'm going to share the major forces of change affecting our state and then some of the leadership imperatives that they require.
And, great.
And how many and how many?
Well, I'm going to highlight five significant forces of change and four leadership imperatives. We don't have time to go through all of them. But
let's hear a couple.
Aging. An aging population.
Yep.
And
when we think about Utah, we don't really think about that. We think about a young population.
Yeah. And so this is an issue nationwide. It's actually a global issue, but it's also an issue in Utah. And I will say that, we're going to get to a point where a good share of our population is 50 years old and older.
You were saying, what was it, 9 counties are already?
Not already, but they're on the path to that. On the path to that. That changes everything.
Yes.
Changes medical care, changes housing choices, transportation choices, the structure of your economy.
And how do changing Utah families play into that?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Caregiving. Yeah, all those things. One other one that I highlight.
When you talk about caregiving on both ends.
Yep.
Young kids and aging parents.
And this one's more of a really attractive thing about our state, but mega investments in big projects. Power District, Sports and Entertainment District, The Point, Inland Port, potential merger of UP and Norfolk Southern.
Yeah.
Something we'll talk about in a minute, the advent of nuclear power in our state, and of course the 2034 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games.
Yeah.
Wow. Who gets these kinds of big investments? Got to do them right.
Do you think we're meeting the moment?
Well, that's where the leadership imperatives come in,
okay,
right? And so
what are you going to say there?
Well, I advocate for change stewardship.
Yeah.
So we got to get good at change, and change stewardship, basically is how do you guide all this?
Yeah.
And then a second thing I say is we've got to have civic virtue and dignity. So, how we talk to people while we change.
Yeah.
And then
shut up.
And then
joking.
The third one I do is I'm going to call it lifelong learning or learning for life. But we got to learn how to change. And then I'll just go with institutional excellence. Our institutions need to change. We need to change together. This is the courts, the Congress, universities.
We're looking at you.
Yeah. So anyway, just a fun topic.
It's interesting. I mean, I think one of the things, I'm sure there'll be legislative leaders there and potentially our next Senate president, which will be interesting to see, I think, what happens in that.
Yeah.
Given that Stuart Adams is exiting, there will be, I think, a real message that's sent on who is chosen to lead the Senate in our state.
John, I'm always interested in Shireen's little angle because she operates in a part of the community that I really don't. The left of center, progressive Utah.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what she was referring to there when she said there might be some senators there, but she's hitting on something because Senator Vickers, who represents Cedar City, is in the race for leadership. And I guess that's what you're referring to.
I am. And I think it's important for...
She knows a lot.
I do.
I'm just amazed how much she knows.
I'm also just hopeful that whoever takes that role is listening to what you're sharing. I think it's a really important message if we have seen the way that power has been stripped from our governor. So we need the legislature to be able to move people in the direction of these big ideas. Yeah. And I hope we get someone who can.
But you look and, you've got Senator Cullimore.
Yeah, I want you to remind
right
the audience
now,
how this happens.
And so what happens is come November, after the election takes place and you know who the senators are, they're going to have a vote.
Private.
The Republicans are going to have a vote to vote on who they want to be Senate president. The House does something similar when it comes to the Speaker. And they will elect their leadership, their Republican leadership. The Democrats will
Who
do something similar.
Votes? Who counts those votes?
It is not the senators. usually what they do is have some folks typically from the Republican Party. I'm not sure what the Democrats do. I've only been on the Republican side. But folks from the Republican Party come in to oversee the casting of the votes. This is the only private vote that legislators typically get to make, at least in the House. It's the only one.
It's a party function generally.
And then what happens is while technically the president is a vote of the entire body, usually it's whoever the Republicans pick is who becomes.
Yeah. And what we're hearing is that Senator Cullimore and Senator Vickers are two of the candidates that are likely.
Those are two names I've heard right now.
Yeah. You know, one other note, Shereen, on the D side, it's not as controversial because sometimes there's only as many Ds as there are leadership positions.
Sometimes, yes. I think we're out of that right now.
Okay.
But yes.
All right. I mentioned that nuclear energy would come up again. I don't know who's the best to summarize this, but Utah's in the bidding for a new U.S. Department of Energy nuclear campus. It would be in Tooele County. It is a big, massive deal. I think the Cox administration is working really hard to make this happen. It's I don't know exactly how to describe it, but think of it almost like a national laboratory on nuclear, you know, here in Tooele County. They probably won't like that characterization, but it's a major federal investment in our state.
Well, national laboratory is a great thing, and research and everything that goes with it. My understanding is this is kind of from, if you will, harvesting the nuclear material all the way through generating energy. And so it's the full cycle right there.
Right. And the waste. I mean, this is
all staying in. Yeah.
Yes. All staying here.
In close proximity to that.
And I think this is, you know, an issue where I am quite skeptical of our leadership and our ability to do this well, considering the history that we have here of downwinders, folks who have lost many family members to cancer because of our mismanagement of these kinds of big projects. And this is certainly not an administration I would trust to lead this in any way that feels like it's good for the people of Utah.
They call it a Nuclear Lifecycle Innovation Campus. And we're one of five states. Idaho, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Tennessee are also in the bidding for this.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of an irony because Tooele County was the site of the Goshoot spent fuel rods. I think it was permanent PFS.
Attempt to store, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this dominated years and years of Mike Leavitt's time as governor, where he worked so hard to keep it out of our state, succeeded. Now, that was just pure storage of spent fuel rods. It didn't have the research component.
It was us being the trash dump for the nation.
And this is very different from that. But it's in the, you know, it's in Tooele County like that was. And we still, as a nation, haven't really figured out storage issues.
Yeah, it's true.
But I also think that reprocessing of nuclear materials, which is a commonplace in many parts of the world, Europe I'll point to directly, we need to be doing that in this country, and I don't think we are.
Not that I know of.
No.
But the other thing is, I mean, get to the broader thing. Energy is critical to our economy, to our future. There's greater and greater demands for energy, not just for data centers, but for lots of other things. And so, therefore, Utahns and Americans want low-cost power, and this is a way to start going down that path that can be more environmentally sensitive.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about AI for a minute. There's $5 million in higher education, AI research grants coming about. I'm more interested in how AI is affecting your work right now, Shereen, your work, John, and then let's build from there a little bit.
Oh, well, I mean, I can say it's touching every corner of my life. When I think about things from the way that I see people using it, I sit on boards, the way that people are using it for presentations for boards. I think about the ways that it's being utilized, certainly in healthcare or across healthcare systems. You know, leading Planned Parenthood, we're not immune to those conversations or the ways that AI is integrated. But I think that there are a lot of big questions that are still out there, and we have been very trepidatious in this world. So thinking about things that are generative models versus actual AI, there's a lot more that falls into the GPT version than AI.
Yeah, yeah. How about for you, John?
So we're sitting there and we're looking to say, okay, how do we leverage this? This is clearly going to be the future in the legal industry. And so how do we leverage the tools right? How do we get them deployed? How do we train folks? How do we avoid skill atrophy, where people overly rely on the tools
and don't
build and develop or retain the skills that they have?
Yeah, interesting. You know, I'm in the research business, and as you know, social scientists, I mean, AI is just right at the heart of research and preparing, you know, products using language of things. I've gotten to the point where when I read a report, I can tell
if it's AI.
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, that's not hard for you to identify, but it's interesting because some things about it are good and some things about it are so aggravating.
Yeah.
you know, just how it's used as a crutch.
But it's changing rapidly.
Changing rapidly.
Because it learns from written language. It's rapidly changing as it's trained on more and more materials.
I'll give a challenge to our
M-Dash was really popular, and now it's shifting away.
I'll give a challenge to our listeners to think about not only AI, but the other forms of intelligence you have that come from the human heart that aren't, you know, generated by AI.
Yeah.
Collaborative intelligence, emotional intelligence, and even spiritual intelligence.
Ooh, I like it.
Is that a good place for us to end?
I think it is. It's good to be back with you. It's great to be back with our listeners. We hope you liked those episodes. Let us know if there are other issues or topics you'd like us to tackle.
Sounds great. And that's a wrap from Natalie Gochner, John Dougal, and Shireen Gorbani. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.